Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's light this candle, as they say.
I like Jay. He's fun.
I know, right?
Oh, hello, everyone. It's Molly. I'm here with Kai. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, the podcast where we try to make today make sense. It is Tuesday, which is when we do our deep dive into a single topic. And today, that topic is going to be both a deep dive and a deep one, QAnon.
Yeah. And it is possible that the whole making sense thing might not make sense because holy cow. So
we're going to try. Yeah.
We'll start with the definition of terms. QAnon, for those who somehow haven't heard of it, because it's been cropping up a lot lately. It's a conspiracy theory started in the fall of 2017 that says Donald Trump was recruited to run for president by military officers, high-ranking military officers, who wanted him to break up a cabal of Satan worshipers made up of high-ranking officials in politics and the American media, and who also, oh, by the way, operate a global child sex trafficking ring. That is real. That is what QAnon is.
Yep. And there are about a million other threads to it.
Yeah.
But at its core, that's it. And it does have its roots in Pizzagate, if you remember that incident. But so you fast forward to 2020, and this false theory, which on its face, when you say it out loud like that, sounds unexpected. But thanks to other platforms, Reddit, Twitter, and I think we can say primarily Facebook and Instagram, actually, now tons of you listeners, tons of people I know have stories of friends or family members, coworkers who believe in and follow QAnon. You know, it's been referred to in the media as a cult. I think BuzzFeed announced they're going to start referring to it as a shared delusion. And you might even have friends in your life who just sort of say things that sound kind of QAnon, like they refer to the deep state all the time, or they talk about saving the children. It's got very classic anti-Semitic tropes built in. It's starting to include more COVID disinformation. But the main thing is it is spreading fast and headed into politics. President Trump has talked about QAnon. He has not attempted to debunk it or disavow it. The FBI has designated a possible domestic terrorist threat. But at the very base level, it's a story about tech and platforms and misinformation and how it can spread, especially right now.
We had asked you in the last week or so if you all had questions about QAnon you wanted us to answer. And let me just say that, holy cow, yes, you did. Kevin McCabe, for instance, wanted to know why we can't figure out who this mysterious Q is. A lot of you also asked about the relationship between QAnon and some other conspiracy theories that are related to COVID. Brandon Fotiu and Amy in San Francisco had that question. Lou in Yardley, Pennsylvania, wanted to know if the Facebook profiles of friends who have now started talking about QAnon could have been commandeered by some nefarious actors. And we got some voice memos as well.
Hi, Molly and Kai. This is Noah from Chicago. My question about QAnon is, what do experts anticipate will cause a reduction of, or at least a slowing in the rate of growth of QAnon's popularity?
I like Noah getting right to the heart of things. How do we stop this thing? Right. Here to make us smart on this today and hopefully help us answer some of those questions is Jevin West. He's a professor at the School of Information at the University of Washington and director of the Center for an Informed Public and the author of the new book, and I love this title, Calling Bullshit, The Art of Skepticism in a Data-Driven World. Jevin, thanks for coming on the show and getting us that E.
Thanks for having me, Kai and Molly. And I can't believe you were able to say the real term. I hope you don't get a fine of $500,000 or something.
We can do anything we want on the podcast.
That's right.
So, Jevin, how did we get to the point where QAnon specifically is gaining so much traction and so fast right now?
I mean, I live and breathe this kind of material because in our center with my colleagues and students and postdocs, we're up day and night sort of studying the spread of misinformation, disinformation. And QAnon, like you said, has been around since 2017. It seems like a lifetime ago, although it's not that long ago. But I would have never guessed in 2018, 2017 that this particular conspiracy theory would have risen to the level it has. But it really speaks to the environment we're in right now and the role that technology can play in spreading these things. And so, you know, I think for a lot of people, it provides a simple solution, although a very mysterious one, as you said it very kindly. People are looking for simple explanations to all of this craziness that's going on in the world. And I've seen it locally too. I was just driving on I-5 in Seattle yesterday, and there was a big sign referring to the same things that you're talking about, the same conspiracy theories, Q signs everywhere. There's a mayor actually in a town in Sequim, Washington, that is now promoting the theory. We actually had a chiropractor in Woodinville, Washington, that spread the original tweet that got amplified by a big QAnon promoter that got all the way to the president of the United States. This was the tweet saying that the CDC was overreporting deaths. And so I see it locally. And I think this rise is it's a confluence of a lot of different factors, the uncertainty, the confusion, and then it sort of aligning with previous conspiracy theories that existed before COVID.
We're fundamentally screwed, right? I mean, I figure if we've got the E, we're going to go all in. We're fundamentally screwed, right? Because you can't disprove a negative. And this is, with all possible respect to any right-thinking person who believes this, which I can't believe any right-thinking person does believe this, this is batty. This is not credible. And yet it is spreading, and people who are allowed to vote believe it. I don't know if anybody heard the NPR Politics podcast this morning, but Scott Detrow was in Latrobe, Pennsylvania with a Trump supporter, with a woman who was wearing a Q necklace. I mean, it has entered our politics already. And the question is, what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do?
Well, I think we need to start reporting it and take it serious. I mean, we weren't really taking it serious, but it is a serious issue because it's overshadowing a lot of the real efforts to, let's say, save the children. As you know, QAnon has sort of hijacked the Save the Children hashtag, or protests, legitimate protests against, you know, the government. We should always be questioning our government and questioning its policies. And there's certainly things that one could argue. So it overshadows the things. So there's serious. So one, we need to be taking it serious and reporting on it like we are, as long as you don't amplify it more than it needs to. Although I think it's so amplified. I think it's now in over 70 countries or so. This was a recent report that came out. It is spreading. It's not just in the United States. And what's interesting is that there are protests with other groups, other conspiracy theory groups, from anti-vaxxers to climate change deniers to 5G conspiracy theorists to Bill Gates is the center of all this conspiracy theories. They're all sort of coming together on this, and Q seems to be sort of sewing them together. We do need to take it serious. And I think the other thing is to look to the platforms as a way, you know, they need to be removing these individuals that are promoting this. They need to be slowing the spread. The problem is, when you do that, that sort of adds to the sort of conspiracy theory. And as you said, Kai, you said it really well. It's hard to prove a negative. And so if you do things like this, this is what they do really well, is they say, well, have you ever noticed that child trafficking has been underreported in the media? Well, if you say that, it's hard to say, well, no, I don't know, because you're hearing lots of COVID or other things. When you use those strategies, it can be incredibly effective way of bringing people in and saying, oh, well, actually, maybe it is underreported, when in fact it's not, right, if you look across the media.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because when you get sort of deeper into the theory and you get to kind of the part about how there's like the shadowy figure who communicates with, known as Q, who communicates in code, and that there will be the great storm where all of the members of the cabal are like rounded up and either sent to Guantanamo or executed. And there will be the deliverance or whatever, where everyone sort of agrees this was all happening all along and we live in utopia. That's when you sort of come off the rails a little bit, but you can see where people see these threads on social media and they start to make sense, right? That like, well, it is, I don't understand why our government works the way it does. We know there are entrenched interests. We know that Jeffrey Epstein was hobnobbing with world leaders, right? Like, it gets, don't all of these sort of take something that appears to be reasonable and then leads you down? Isn't that what social media is so good at, is the radicalization hole?
Absolutely. I mean, you said it perfectly, Molly, because a lot of these conspiracy theories are rooted in partial truths. So there was this billionaire in New York City that was hobnobbing with Hollywood stars and political leaders, Epstein, of course, this being this person. You know, there has been this, you know, continued growth of this anti-globalist conspiracy theories. It seems to sew a lot of these conspiracy theories together. There's these grains of truth. And so those that sort of promote these things take them to the next level. And what's interesting about QAnon is that it may have died early on. So it rose initially on 4chan, and you never know for sure if it would die, but a lot of these conspiracy theories come and go. This one didn't go because there were two monitors on QAnon, and there was, I think, a YouTuber, not a real big influencer, but they then started promoting this. They started creating higher quality videos. They started to use these platforms strategically, partly to make money. If you look at a lot of these conspiracy theories, a lot of the root of what they're doing too is making money. If you look at someone like Alex Jones, who's a professional conspiracy theorist, he's making money, on these kinds of stories. And so, yeah, like one of the questions that you got originally, you just read, that said, why can't we find this person? And, there are these ways of anonymizing on these platforms, but let's say there's this person, Q. Being not known adds to that lure of this conspiracy theory, and it doesn't provide for any answers, so it keeps it open for possibly having lots of these things be true.
Mm-hmm. What came first? Our political institutions breaking down and distrust becoming rampant in the society, or QAnon?
Well, I think it's definitely trust. I'm so glad you hit the trust, because that's something I've been thinking a whole bunch about. One thing that I've started to understand better as someone who didn't know a lot about trust, and of course I track these as a researcher, the surveys from the Gallup poll, the Pew Research Center, et cetera, and these trust indicators for things like media and government have been going down and down, and that's something we should be very concerned about. Even really stable institutions like universities and science have been going down, and certainly during this pandemic, there's been issues of trust. But one thing about trust, it's kind of like the conservation of mass, this idea in physics that you can't create mass, you can't delete it. It just transfers. And so if we have trust, let's say, in national media at one point in our life, and then we're told all the time to distrust this quote unquote fake news all the time, then that trust doesn't go away. It just shifts. And where does it shift at this point? Well, there's this cesspool of ideas on the internet. Good ideas. There's a lot of good ideas on the internet, of course, too, and through social media. It's not all bad. I wouldn't take away social media, but I certainly think we have some big fixes. But where does it go? If you're told not to trust, and your community tells you not to trust the national media, these well-trained, and sometimes there's issues with the national media, no question, but that trust just shifts. And so when that shift happens, it's going into these other places that don't have the same vetting, that don't have the same training, that don't have the same incentives to get it right most of the time. So this is something I'm concerned about. And I think this trust shifting happened before QAnon. And of course, QAnon leverages that. And a lot of these conspiracy theories leverage that distrust, uncertainty, and confusion right now during the world.
Right. And then on top of that, you have these awesome social media algorithms, which are so good at showing you a thing that is going to make you click and engage and comment and argue, and hiding all your activities in groups, right? Like, how much are, I know it is de rigueur to blame social media companies for a lot of things right now, but it seems like there's a lot of blame to be laid here in terms of the spread of QAnon.
You're right, Molly. There is a lot of blame, and I think it's about time to bring them to the regulatory table. I think we're going in that direction. It's one of the few bipartisan issues that we can kind of look to somewhat positively. But there is a lot of blame. And you talked about the algorithms. Actually, I teach classes in data science and machine learning. And there is one objective of these algorithms on social media, and it's to glue you to the platform. And they don't deny that. That's not a conspiracy theory all itself. This is something they admit to shareholders and to the public. And this is what they want. They want your eyeballs on the platform so that you can click ads. And so they don't care necessarily what you read, whether you believe it, the quality of the reading. Of course, they can at some point, if that affected the eyeballs and time on the platform, then they would start to care. But that doesn't align with quality journalism or news or information. And so if you're going to spend more time on a conspiracy theory video because it just catches your attention, and it's one of those like man bites dog rather than the other way around, then you will click on it. The algorithm will continue to feed you this kind of stuff. And then as you get into these rabbit holes and you get into the further down into these narratives, it keeps feeding you those sorts of things. So there's a lot of discussion right now about being able to truly clear, not just clear cookies on your web browser, but to clear search, because maybe you accidentally click on something or you just click on something for entertainment. And then you start getting these things more and more. But certainly social media needs to be more transparent about it and needs to be better about trying to not just stick us to these platforms. YouTube was an example of this, where many reports came out last year showing how conspiracy theories were only a click away. Even if you went into incognito mode in your web browser, you could quickly randomly click yourself to, the latest conspiracy theory video. And they've tried to make some changes there too, but it just shows how difficult it is if you just allow the algorithms to optimize on something as sort of unsocietally important as eyeballs on platform.
Mm-hmm. So what I hear you saying is that number one, we are screwed, but number two, try though we might, the forces of technology and political division and people wanting to believe in something are lined up against us as we try to rid this from our political system, right?
They are. And actually, this goes to some interesting, I think, physics postulates. Like the Fermi postulate is one of these examples where, a physicist was trying to explain why we haven't seen other life in the universe at this point. And the idea was that, well, if there was an advanced civilization, like a human civilization, they would have just blown themselves up with nuclear weapons by that point. But maybe it's that they discovered social media. It was Web 2.0 that they discovered, and then the world ended. I hope it doesn't get to that point. I'm more of an optimist. I think we'll get past this. But, I think one of the things that we can do is start to look to some of the other reasons that might be causing this. Some of the economic issues, these issues of disenfranchisement, alienation, culturally, socially. I think that we look to those roots of things, and we do need to rein in the role and impact that social media is having in facilitating this kind of thinking, and also this just disenchantment with the truth. And there's no allegiance to fact or truth. And it's not even an issue of like relativism versus sort of, that there exists, a truth that, the earth goes around the sun or something. It's just that there's so much confusion right now, especially with a lot of the disinformation campaigns that have been pushed for some time now from lots of bad state actors. Of course, Russia is identified as one of those major ones, and they certainly are, but there are others too. And their main goal is simply to just sow confusion, distrust, and just inject noise into the system. And it seems to be working, unfortunately. So we gotta combat that kind of stuff.
So look, here's the thing. This is real.
It is.
It is getting traction with a not small portion of the American public. We have an election coming up in 55-ish, whatever it is, days, in which QAnon, because of the things President Trump has done and said or not said, is a factor. And I guess I wonder, as a guy who studies this stuff, what are you doing? I mean, what's your takeaway?
So there's three things I think we have to do. We need a long-term strategy, which is, to me, it's media literacy and civic online discourse education at all levels, from K-1 to K-99. We need to, of course, focus on the next generation that's coming through. But we also need to be thinking about this across the population for those that are retired. So education, to me, really is one of the only antidotes. But that's a long-term solution. And we're seeing some of those things in states. People are pushing new legislation to incorporate it in all aspects of education. So number one, we have to do a better job there. Number two, we really need to bring platforms to the table, and we need to be thinking more constructively, not just the industry itself, but with policymakers and with researchers that study this all the time, and really start to think about ways of overcoming some of these negative effects that we've seen from social media. And then the third thing is that we really do need to consider policies. And most importantly, if I had one magic wand, it would be to inject $20 billion or some ridiculous amount of money into local journalism. I think that's one of the areas in which we're really missing. And with these news deserts popping up and people not having, living by that journalist that's reporting and knows about their values and perspectives, to me, if I could, you know, just put two, if you give, you give me two magic wands, it would be to reinvigorate local journalism and to improve our education on media literacy.
Jevin West is a professor in the Information School at the University of Washington. Thank you so much for the time and the concise solutioning, our favorite thing.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and thanks for making us smarter. It's things like this that will be antidotes to this kind of crazy stuff that we're kind of seeing and living through right now.
Man,
we are
so
trying.
Thanks. Thanks for your
Jevin,
faith.
Thanks a lot.
I'm going to obsess about that metaphor forever. The idea of the conservation of mass, the law of the conservation of mass, is
it's
that
great,
there's only
right?
so much trust to go
yeah.
around, right? And that you will put yeah. it in places that make more sense than what you're seeing.
Yep.
It's
and so here comes this theory out of nowhere on the internet about a child sex trafficking ring and generals in the United States anointing somebody to take care of it. And what? But yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's really
interesting. I know I'm coming off really – go ahead.
Well, it gets to a conversation we had in the wealth inequality episode with that Kimberly and I did when you were gone, because our guest talked about what happens when that one of the markers for wealth inequality becoming a societal problem is when people feel that their government no longer works for them.
Mm-hmm.
When they sort of start to go like, huh, 79% of Americans think that there should be some kind of a background check on automatic weapons, but that law like never passes. And they start to sort of feel this disconnect from what their lives are, our lives are, right? And the priorities of government or what appears to be a ruling class of the 1%. And so along comes a theory that plays on that. Like that's the part where, you know, you are coming off like this is so crazy. But it's not. It's not crazy till you get to like execute all the celebrities and the, you know, like, yeah, it gets pretty nutty, but it starts out with a feeling of dislocation that almost everyone can relate to right now at a moment when everybody's stuck at home on the internet trying to figure out what's going on. And like, there is real power in that. And you can see why it's so seductive, actually.
Yeah. It's scary. It's just freaking scary.
It is. The dogs have
thoughts
too.
We're going to take
that,
a little break.
You did.
We're going to answer. We're going to answer some questions y'all had about QAnon, including the question a lot of you had actually, which was basically, I've got a family member, a friend, or a coworker who has fallen down the QAnon rabbit hole. Now, what do I do? Stick around for that. We'll get there.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. The shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more, Wondery means business.
Okay, we decided to go all theme today, all QAnon all the time, and not take a little detour into the news because it felt weird to do that, frankly. I was reading the rundown this morning, and I said, yeah, let's pass on the news because we got a lot of QAnon questions. And fundamentally, it's a really big thing, which will play out in 55 days in a very significant way, and we need to be smart about it. So we're going to go straight to the mailbag.
Yeah.
Hi, Kai and Molly.
This is Brent in Detroit.
This is Rebecca from Baltimore.
It was great to hear comments on my question about GDPR.
I wanted to put in my vote.
I want to discuss a slightly different but maybe related thing.
That's like exactly what today's mailbag is. Slightly different, but definitely related. What do you want to know? Tuesday QAnon edition. The first question comes from Ed. Ed has a family member who both follows QAnon and I thought this was a really important point that Jevin brought up, it's a moneymaker, sells QAnon-related merchandise. Yeah. And Ed wants to know, okay, if this has been designated, I'm doing a little lead into his actual question, but if this has been designated as a possible domestic terror threat, if it's recognized as dangerous misinformation, like, we should be clear that QAnon has been implicated in kidnappings, at least two murders, someone with a gun shut down the like George Washington Bridge in 2017 or maybe 2018. So Ed says, all right, why isn't anyone asking for online services to block accounts that are making money from selling all this paraphernalia? Go after PayPal, eBay, and other companies that knowingly process all this disinformation for profit too. Why just the big two, Facebook and Twitter? Which is a good question.
It's a good question. I've got a really cynical answer. The cynical answer is that a lot of these companies make money from the accounts that are making money from selling all the QAnon paraphernalia. To wit, which I did not know until I read the prep for this episode, you can buy QAnon stuff on Amazon. Hello? Hello? Yep.
It is so easy to find and buy QAnon merch. Trust the Plan is a flag that I just pulled up. The Great Awakening. Oh, wait, here's the, it's QAnon, an invitation to the Great Awakening, which, let me remind you again, this is where all of the cabal members have been executed. And now there's a utopia led by Donald Trump. Like, in case you, I just want to like make it clear over and over that where this plan leads, so that when like the Texas GOP started selling merch that said, we are the storm is where everybody gets rounded up and killed. Like, it's really dark. And so it is fair to ask these questions of why these platforms are continuing to help to spread this disinformation that is dangerous.
And the answer is that they make money from it.
And the answer is that they make money from it. Same question. But Amazon, it's really, I think they're like a really interesting example that we're going to try to do some stories on, because people have, Amazon has under pressure, like, removed or de-emphasized, you know, books that spread medical disinformation and that kind of thing. And so I think they in particular are going to start to get a little more attention. But yeah, it's also, it's not illegal. Like, PayPal can process all the payments it wants for whatever it wants.
Okay. God, this is all, it's so depressing. And look, I'm glad we're doing this episode because I'm learning a bunch, or I have learned a bunch in getting ready to do it. But man, it's depressing. Okay. So a lot of people had a version of this question, which is, how do I talk to loved ones or acquaintances who believe in QAnon? Molly Wood.
Yeah. So I interviewed this amazing woman on Marketplace Tech, Rachel Bernstein. She's an educator, a therapist, and she's on the advisory board of the International Cultic Studies Association. So we did this episode where we were like, hey, this looks like a cult. And she was like, yep, for sure. And when we started to talk about solutions, she just had this, I thought, remarkable answer. First, we asked how to approach this problem, but also how tech companies and their algorithms, if they helped spread QAnon in the first place, can they help sort of like deprogram at scale? And here's what Rachel Bernstein said.
Tech companies are going to have to be very clever about how they deliver their message. They're probably going to have to fight fire with fire. They're going to need to do it in a similar fashion to QAnon, with sound bites, with acronyms, with slogans, with memes, with things that are easy to remember and repeat. And you might have to kind of learn to speak their language a bit, to kind of enter into their world, just to have them be open to you, to listen to you.
It's interesting, too, because we've seen the media try to do things to counter the narrative. But it feels like in some cases, and there's some research suggesting that counter narratives that come from the people perceived to be the enemy could actually make things worse, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I see all this great effort being put into these wonderful articles and shows, and I think they're just digging a hole for themselves. You, as someone who is offering counter information without connecting with the person first and lowering their defenses in a good and healthy way, you're then just falling into a trap, because they have been told that anyone who speaks against it is the enemy. Anyone who speaks against it is against us. Anyone who speaks against it is a pedophile. And so you're just being kind of lobbed onto that side of the court as the enemy because it is this them versus us mentality. And that's what's happened so far, and that's what will continue to happen unless you learn how to shift the delivery of the information.
Right. Who should the message come from?
So what's interesting about that is that it needs to come from someone, I think, who can prove that they care about the same issues, where they're not talking about QAnon being wrong, but because they care about their fellow human being, they would like their fellow human being to be able to access other information. They also can point out certain things, like if you got involved in this, as I've heard from a lot of people, in order to protect the world or protect the children, what has this organization done? Where's the evidence that it has helped? And so there usually isn't kind of, you know, tangible evidence. And so then you can offer them other ways to really help.
So what I loved about this interview, was that she also reminded, I thought that Rachel did such a good job of reminding me, at least, that this is like kind of fundamentally a problem of empathy, that a lot of the people, you know, you see all these like moms and influencers on Instagram who are falling into this because they really are like, wait, children are in danger and we need to do something to help. And that a way to come at this is not to, is to sort of be like, hey, you are really smart. You do really care. Like, I also care about children. Let's do something productive together. I don't know. It was just a really, it was just a very different perspective, I thought, than I had had before, which is like people are scared and confused and desperate and they want to do something good. Not all of them, but, you know, some of them.
Yeah. It occurred to me as I was listening to that, that really through the show today, I've not been incredibly empathetic toward the people who believe this. Mostly, I think, because, well, who knows? Maybe I've got problems with empathy, but that's an entirely different podcast. But it just, it seems so, on the face of it, not credible. But then if I try to, you know, as we saw in that empathy training the other day, if you climb down in the hole with them and you try to see it from where they sit, they're wanting to do something nice for kids, or they have no trust in our institutions and they believe, you know, something better has to be. I don't know. It's just, and maybe that's part of why this is so bewildering, because it's just, it's not credible on the face of it. And yet so many people are believing it. Kevin Roos said in the New York Times a number of weeks ago, like hundreds of thousands of people probably believe this, which is a lot of people.
I mean, NBC did some reporting that said that there were millions of people in the Facebook groups that had built up over the years.
Yeah.
Look, QAnon supporters are getting elected. You know, like it is now.
There's going to be one in Congress next year, at least.
There is almost certainly going to be one in Congress next year. It's kind of like, I've seen a lot of people, including Kevin Roos, compare it to like the Tea Party, how when the Tea Party sort of first appeared, people were like, that is way too radical. I mean, granted, this calls for rounding up and killing a global cabal of the people who drink the blood of babies. Like, it gets, you know, it gets very far afield. Yeah. But I think ultimately the point is when nothing makes sense to people, this is the kind of thing that will come along and make sense.
Right. That's exactly
it
right.
It tells you... I think the thing that is crushing your soul on the inside, which I can feel from here, is the realization that this is how little things make sense to people right now. Mm-hmm. Things make so little sense to people right now that they're like, all right, sure, this seems reasonable. Exactly. Yeah. That's a rough thing to confront.
Okay. All right. We're gonna close it out here, but we're going to stay on theme with the Make Me Smart question. Joan Donovan is the research director of the Shorenstein Center on Media Politics and Public Policy. That's at Harvard. She was on Marketplace Tech with Molly the other day. And here is her answer to what is something you thought you knew, but later found out you were wrong about.
This notion that the internet is a liberation technology. So for years, I was invested in building internet architecture and infrastructure for communication. especially among people that really wanted to change the world. And when the illusion really broke for me was during Ferguson and Black Lives Matter, when I saw activists struggle again to be heard. And you saw the rise of a kind of micro celebrity of activists that was at the helm, that was using Twitter in some instances for their own personal gain. And so I started to feel like this was entrepreneurial in essence, not liberatory.
Hmm. Like, no hesitation. She's like, oh, I was wrong when I thought the internet was a tool for liberation. This show ended up being way more of a downer than I expected it would be. I thought it was going to be like illuminating and then maybe helpful and stuff.
Well, it has been. It's been illuminating. It's been, you know, reasonably helpful. But the topic at hand is just dark. It just really, it really is.
It really, you know? Really is. It's true. We're in a deep hole right now, friends. Yep. We need the Avengers to assemble and come and get us out.
Kind of far.
All right. You know what? The first step is getting smart. The more you know, the more you know. Yep. That's it for today's show. Then you can know even more from our newsletter, marketplace.org/newsletters. And then you can know even more on tomorrow's show. What do you want to know Wednesday? Hey, the good news is it's already almost Wednesday. Make me smart almost at marketplace.org. Subject line, questions. We'll see you tomorrow.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Rose Conlon. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Ben Hethcote does video. Ethan Parrots does actually all the video work, though. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and our smart speaker skills.
Today's program was engineered by Jay Siebold, and I must say he was delightful. Mixed by Daniel Ramirez. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. The senior producer is Bridget Bodner, and the executive director of On Demand is Satara Nieves. I just like Jay's style. I like your style, Jay.
and also, by the way, this is after being up all night because he was on the morning show shift this morning. So,
oh my goodness, and he's still so peppy. What a hero.
I know, right? I know.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.